What is up, and welcome to 24 Minutes of the Oscars, the podcast that takes a look at the 2024 Oscars 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we're kicking off our 2024 award season by talking about one of the movies that proved to create one of the biggest summer blockbuster events in the history of cinema, Greta Gerwig's Barbie.
Barbie suffers a crisis that leads her to question her world and her existence. This is Best Picture number one, the very first one. This kicks off our 10-week adventure talking about all 10 Best Picture nominees at the 2024 Academy Awards. If you're new to this changeover on the pod, welcome. We're now changing over into an Oscars pod. If you're returning, you kind of know we did this last year. Basically, the 10 weeks leading up to the Oscars, we change over to 24 minutes of the Oscars. We talk about every single Best Picture nominee leading up to the Oscars. We have a great Oscars recap, a live reaction, breakdown the week after. It's very, very fun stuff. Very, very exciting. We have a wonderful guest joining us for our first Oscars episode of the season, and one that we were sure would be nominated. I'll get into that in just a second, but Bobby Miller of the Afternoon Special is joining us. Bobby, welcome to the pod. It's so great to have you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so great to be here.
Excited to have you. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm feeling the Kenergy already, you know? Yeah. I feel it.
Very good Kenergy in the studio right now.
Very good.
Absolutely. Now, right before we started recording, Bobby, you hopped on. You've got a wonderful shirt. The Super Yaki director Greta Gerwig shirt. Ben, you're wearing the same shirt.
Indeed.
I also own that shirt, but you guys didn't give me the memo. So I feel kind of left out. I don't feel the Kenergy is what I'm saying. I feel like left out of the Kenergy.
But you're still Kenough, you know what I mean, to us.
Yeah, you're still Kenough.
How did I not see that coming? That's wonderful. So a little quick peek behind the curtain here as we kind of kick off our 24 minutes of the Oscars season. We are recording this episode and the next few episodes about 3 or 4 weeks before the nomination list comes out for the Best Picture nominees. So we had to do this last year as well. We play this really fun game at the start of this season where we basically just have to guess what movies are going to be nominated for Best Picture, which ones we feel most confident in. And we didn't see a better or smarter choice than kicking off with Barbie, honestly, for episode number one. We are going to kind of double dip. We'll do Barbie week one. We'll do Oppenheimer week two. Get the Barbenheimer effect in full action. I feel like those are pretty sure bets for Best Picture nominees.
And we had Bobby, the shortlist come out today, right? So we know it's on there, like the Oscar shortlist, which Bobby made a great point on Twitter. Unfortunately, Priscilla left off of hair and makeup, which is just insane. I couldn't believe that.
Absolutely. It was crazy. Nuts.
You
absolutely
put it better than I could, but it was just nuts to see that.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked at some of the like below line shortlist choices, especially makeup and hair. I was like, Barbie and Priscilla are surely to be in those categories. And then when I saw Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon, I was like, oh, okay, no.
This is what we're doing. Okay.
Yeah.
So. Interesting. It's a fascinating little precursor to like where we might be headed in about 10 weeks and what the Academy kind of feels. Bobby, do you agree? Is Barbie probably the safest Best Picture bet out of what could happen?
I go back and forth. There are some times when I'm like, oh, totally, it's a shoe-in. But then I'm like, is it too commercial? Is it too, does it not have enough prestige for the Academy? You know, like, are there still, like, does that sentiment still kind of like loom within the Academy? But then I think about how much of a cultural juggernaut it was this year. Yeah. And just at least technically speaking, like, I think it might be the like Avatar Way of Water pick for this year, where it gets a lot of below the line nominees and like maybe some wins, but maybe not in like any acting or screenplay or like directing. But I think it's a shoe-in for sure.
Yeah,
it feels like it's been getting a lot of nominations from other critics, you know, and things like that. So I'm hopeful. I'm, you know, we obviously picked it as our first episode, so I think we're high on it being nominated.
Ben, can I ask you personally, like, What do we do if we get this one wrong? Like, what if they, like, I'm not saying I don't think Barbie will, you know, not be nominated. But like, what if, I guess Bobby makes me question really quickly. Like, are we going to have to record like an 11th episode at the 11th hour?
Delete this episode. It just never happened.
It just never happened. So next week when we talk about Oppenheimer, like last week about Barbie, it's like, what Barbie episode are they talking about?
Or you just like record a whole new bit that's like, this is the first one. We're confident that this will be.
This is it. Yeah. We'll have to do two takes next week for Oppenheimer. Like, this is obviously going to get nominated.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, that being said, I do feel pretty confident that Barbie is going to be nominated.
You know what I'd like, actually? Let's keep this episode, but let's just dub whatever movie gets nominated over this. And just like whenever we say Barbie, we'll just like put that, you know, on there. I think that'd be even better. It's just
like, I love past lives.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I want to have.
We got to use an AI voice generator, though. That's where the money's made.
That's the way to go.
So let's kick off our Oscars conversation. So I'll fill the listeners in real quick. This is kind of the plan for the next 10 weeks. We're going to pick a movie every single week. We're going to talk about that movie, obviously starting with kind of the more shoo-ins and the bigger picks. We'll talk about the Oscars. We'll kind of talk about what we think that movie may or may not be nominated for when the lists do officially come out for nominations. We will kind of discuss those lists a little less kind of conjecture and more just about what is going to happen at the Academy Awards. We will break down the movies and do some true cinema like we normally do on the pod, talk about the movie a little bit. And then a difference from last year, we're going to be basically tying every movie we talk about to a particular category at the Academy Awards this year. So in this case for Barbie, we're going to tie it to the best leading actress category and the best actress race. Kind of talk about that, break it down, talk about the nominees, potential winners, and what that might be. I think last year when we talked about the Oscars, we did it a bit differently and kind of ran through history of maybe our favorite winners of certain categories. But that's the plan for this. So this is how we're going to kind of structure this episode. Bobby, I want to start with you. The Oscars, where do you fall? Do you watch them every year? What's your history with them? Are you excited for them this year?
Yeah, I've always loved the Oscars. I think when I was a kid, it was more about the fashions of the Oscars more than it was like who was winning, because when I was small, I wasn't watching these movies other than like maybe the best animated feature category. I was just like, I love to see the pretty dresses. But then as I got older and got into film more, and especially like when I was in college, because I went to school for journalism and film, I was kind of like very much so into it and into award season. And this year I actually got to go to the Oscars, which was really, really cool.
Oh, wow.
Bobby,
I didn't know this. We got a famous person on the pod.
Oh, no. I worked with the Academy on TikTok. I did a couple of videos for them, and then I got a chance to be on the red carpet. So if you look at some of the footage from the fan section, you'll see my fire engine orange hair in the background. So that was a super fun experience. And this year's Oscars was really great. I was Everything Everywhere All at Once, day one truther. And so seeing its progression throughout the year was really, really awesome. But I love the Oscars. I love award season. That's my favorite season.
I love that.
So fun. I think we were high on Everything Everywhere pretty early too. So it was great to see it carry out throughout the year. Cause you know, it was a little early in the year. You never know if they're gonna have the legs or not. So yeah, it was a good Oscars for sure.
Yeah. I was really happy. I mean, I was a little bummed every time, oh my gosh, All Quiet on the Western Front one, because I was like,
don't even start with me, Bobby. Don't even start. I can't even tell you the amount of heartbreak I had when that won Best Score. I was like, we should just end it all. We just abolish the Academy. We're done.
I was like, okay, so Babylon is not getting Best Score. Got it. Great. Yeah. I was a little bit confused by that. But other than that, it was a good Oscars.
Yeah, last year Ben and I got to watch the Oscars together. That was our first time seeing him. He flew out to my city. So we have a great like kind of live reaction episode we did right after the Oscars happened, and that was pretty fun. Ben, you mentioned Everything Everywhere last year releasing early. We've kind of talked about this on recent episodes of the pod as well. Barbie, obviously big summer blockbuster, released in July. I think as we progress into these 10 weeks, there'll be a very interesting conversation about release date and the longevity of the cultural imprint of certain movies. I think Barbie and Oppenheimer are kind of in an echelon of their own when it comes to that conversation. But if you look at something like Past Lives that could be competing this year, that was an earlier year release as well. I Was Afraid got shortlisted for some stuff today, which is pretty crazy. That released like in March. So I think there's a lot of interesting things there. Ben, how are you feeling about the Oscars this year? This is really the first time that we've kind of maybe got to break it down a little bit, you know, more than just like a surface conversation in relation to another movie. Are you excited? I don't know.
I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun. It's been interesting because it's felt like for a while there was this time frame where it was like Oppenheimer versus Killers. It kind of felt like those were like what two? And I feel like I'm just hearing less and less about Killers of the Flower Moon. And I'm curious to see. I'm just curious to see if that reflects and like Oppenheimer kind of takes over. You know what I mean? Like I think Killers is a good movie. I mean, I think they're both good movies, but it's just been interesting to see how the narrative or the conversations have been changing as the rest of these other critics awards have come out.
Can I ask you, Bobby, specifically, you mentioned you love award season. We also very much love award season here. I think every year around this time, around the November, December timeframe, right? We have 4 months, we have 5 months until the Academy Awards. And this initial kind of season conversation kicks off where it's like, oh, wow, that's a really long time for an awards season. But then there's also people that are like, oh, maybe it's perfect. Maybe it's not enough. Maybe we need to have the Oscars here at this time or something like that. Like, where do you stand on the long run up to like the March Oscars? And is that too much of a time frame in your mind?
I go back and forth because on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, guys, like the Oscars is really, really far away. Like this is so much time. Something could release and be this like dark horse hit and everything. I think my main thing, I never really care when the Oscars are happening, but I do always want people, I guess, to take into account when nominations are decided on, because that's way ahead of when the actual ceremony is. The actual ceremony is in March. And I think nominations wrap up in January-ish. So then it's just a waiting game of like, there's already a winner. We just don't know it. So I think that's what matters more. So when you take that into consideration, we're kind of at the end, like we're almost at the finish line as far as like when nominations and everything pull in. So I'm of the mind that it's like, it's this really weird nebulous timeline. I think when things are not on a calendar year format for me, my brain doesn't know how to process it. I don't know like when eligibility ends and all that crap. So I'm like, just have fun. I don't I'm just here.
Go team.
Someone's gonna win
because we're like we're less than a month I think from the nominations. Is it like January 13th or something like that? Like so it'll be kind of interesting to see. Obviously it'll tell if we were right starting out with this movie. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's really interesting to, because specifically tied to Barbie, like we just, Ryan Gosling just released this kind of like Ken EP the other day with three new versions of I'm Just Ken. And my first, you know, depraved psychotic thought was like, okay, cool. He's campaigning. Like we're in this, like he's gunning it. Maybe the dude just wanted to record some music like Dead Man's Bones fashion and just like get back behind the mic, which probably more realistically. But I was like, this is a really smart play. So I think, at least for me, in terms of like my relationship to the Oscars, especially contrary to last year, like I feel much more enveloped in it this year, where from like November 1st on, when the conversations kind of start rumbling, every single day it's like, cool, what film critics group nominated or won, you know, this this person, actor, director, movie, and what is this person doing now that, of course, the strike is over, which we were all very scared might not have been over in time for the Oscars. What are they doing on social media? How are they acting? What are they recording things? Are they like hosting SNL? Are they coming out with promos? I think like a lot of that is very psychotic and interesting conversations. Cause it's like, you know, same thing. Billie Eilish sings a Barbie song the other night on SNL. And I was like, oh boy, the Academy might want her doing that on stage.
For sure.
And my family, my girls and my wife are just like, wow, that was a cool performance. And I'm like, there's so much behind the performance. So let's talk about Barbie. What do we think it's going to be nominated for? I'm going to give a really quick list here of the potentials that I see. Let me know if I leave anything off, and we'll kind of hash it out quickly with where we see it going or the odds or what have you. Of course, we think it'll be nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Greta Gerwig, Best Actress, Margot Robbie, Best Supporting Actor, Ryan Gosling, Best Original Song, I'm Just Ken. This was shortlisted today, so it is up for eligibility. Another Best Original Song, What Was I Made For? Again, the Billie Eilish one, shortlisted. And then a third shortlist for Best Original Song for Dance the Night. Only two of those can be officially nominated in the five kind of pool category. So that'll be an interesting conversation. Best Sound, it made the shortlist for. I'd like to talk about that a little bit more. I don't really know what we're doing there. Best Original Score, shortlisted. Best Original Screenplay, I don't know if that's still up for debate. That was a big point of contention maybe a month ago. Best Costume Design, Best Production Design, and it did miss out, Bobby, as you mentioned, on Best Makeup and Hairstyling. Did not make the shortlist, will not be eligible for the 2024 Academy Awards. Okay, Bobby, where do you stand on any of those? Any best chances, worst chances, anything I left off that might be on your board?
I think Best Picture for sure. I now am moving towards Greta being a lock for director. I would be shocked if she doesn't get in. I have never been too like high on the supply of Margot getting in for Best Actress, which is unfortunate because she does give a really great performance. But I think it's a little bit more subdued than Ryan Gosling's Ken. I think Ken is the flashy piece of the movie. I think Ryan Gosling's a lock. If nothing else, he's kind of the personality hire of that category. He may not win, but like I think everyone wants him to get nominated. A lot of my like surefires are like below the line. So Best Production Design for sure, Best Costuming for sure. Sound, not really sure about that.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about
what
that
do we
either.
What do we think the thought process is on the shortlist on that one? I literally just watched the movie last night, and I was like, at no point in time was I like, Best Sound nominee, we got it. Like,
yeah, I
just
wasn't
never
blown
crossed
away
my
by
mind.
It. Yeah.
I'm not either. I don't know if the Academy doesn't always know what to do with sound, because last year I was like, oh, Nope is going to be a shoe-in for sound, and it got completely shut out.
Goose-egged.
So, listen, shout out to the editors and sound editors out there. I'm sure you guys have your reasons. I don't know what they are. So I'm not quite sure about that. I'm curious about screenplay too, whether it falls in original or adapted, because I don't know what it would be adapting, but then it's an IP, so can it be original?
Right.
I don't really know. And then best score, I mean, sure. Yeah. Like, it's fine. And then all the songs, we already kind of knew that I'm Just Ken and like What Was I Made For, and Dance the Night Away was probably going to get it. But I'm not too crazy on score, only because I don't think I can remember one big set piece that involves the score. So if it gets in, it's, I guess, good for the nomination numbers. But other than that,
I feel like ditto to everything you said. I mean, score, I feel like they just saw like Mark Ronson's name, like, oh, we like Mark, let's nominate him, you know, or at least get it on the short list. But I can't imagine it's going to make it all the way to the final five. Like, it's fine, but it's nothing remarkable, I don't think. But I'm with you on everything else. Like, I think What Was I Made For? That feels like got to be the one lock, I think, for the original song. I'm Just Kind of be cool for sure. But What Was I Made For? Super powerful. Gosling, I'm with you on Margot too. It's like, it's not that she was bad at all, it's just the competition is pretty stiff, it seems like this year, which is a good problem to have. And I just don't know, like you said, it's kind of a subdued performance, so maybe it just it kind of misses out. But I really hope we see Greta there, and obviously hope Best Picture.
I think that Barbie is giving the Academy a very clear opportunity to kind of prove itself of like, we recognize the importance of Barbie and like the things that Barbie talks about and like the importance of Greta being a household directorial name now, and things like that. And so I think they have a really good possibility to do some really cool nominations. Of course, like we see the first big blunder with the hairstyling and makeup. So maybe not, maybe like they don't go that way. You guys both mentioned score. I think Past Lives was like the biggest shortlist omission for score.
Yeah.
So a lot of these below the line things like score, sound, costume and makeup and hairstyling, are more so up in the air than I think a lot of us think that they might be. And you know, Past Lives, fingers crossed that it's on the list of 10 best picture. We might get the chance to talk about it again. I hope so. I think there's a lot of potential there. Where do we think Barbie falls? We're gonna finish this episode with kind of a quick collaborative like best picture nominations idea ranking, because we don't have our nominees list yet. But where are we thinking, Bobby? Where do you think in like the best picture power rankings, your personal or where we might end up, you know, in January when the list is announced? Where does Barbie fall on that?
Oh, I cannot give my personal because it's so deeply unserious. like if it was up to me, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Meet Mayhem would be number one.
Right?
Let's go.
I love that movie.
That was one of my favorite movies of the year. But if I'm trying to use my critic brain, I would say that it's kind of perfectly in the middle. Like it kind of can go either way. Maybe like top four, like it may kind of like inch towards top four, but I wouldn't put it as like a surefire one, two, or three. Like I think there are other films that are just off of the strength of the director or the prestige factor or the name. Like I think Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, like those types are strong best pictures. Those are like duh, best pictures. Yeah. Barbie, I think, is a cool four or five. Like you're not going to be shocked that it gets in, but you're also like not going to be shocked if it gets left out too.
Yeah. I think it's great. I honestly was going to put it at five, where it's like top half, but the lower part of the top half, you know, just, you know, it's very commercial. I don't know that it's like a huge contender compared to some of these other films that are coming out, but I feel like it's going to be there.
Yeah. I think it'll be there for sure. I do agree with both of you. I think it is just kind of a middle of the pack situation, but again, like we're pretty far out on voting and what it does end up coming down to, and even nomination lists. So I'm curious what kind of the play is from especially from Warner Brothers, like with this movie, in terms of like what they're pushing for with any, you know, FYC packages and things like that. Shout out Warner Bros. If you want to send us an FYC package, like we wouldn't snuff our nose at all. We love Barbie. It's fantastic. So
two of us have our shirts on of Barbie. So at least two of us.
If that is what omits me from getting an FYC package, I will be furious.
I'm just saying, if you only have two, you know,
you know where to put them.
People. Look at my background. I mean, yeah, right? I'm already.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I think Barbie is in the mix, I think is a really, really good way to put it. Oppenheimer and Barbie to me are like the two movies where it's like, if the studio can just like toss $1 million behind it, they can make some really cool, you know, BuzzFeed videos or Puppy Dog videos, or they can, you know, do some really cool red carpet stuff that could really give them a nice bump in terms of like the cultural, re-establishment of like where they fall, because we've been having the Oppenheimer Barbie conversation for 6 months now, so it is worrisome that we might start to kind of die out and fizzle on those kinds of things. You guys want to talk about the movie? Want to talk about Barbie and our favorite parts?
Yeah,
let's do it.
Okay,
favorite
cool.
Barbie parts.
Favorite Barbie parts. So last night, I have a 3 and a 5 year old daughter. They have seen Barbie, and they love it. They think it's great. Obviously, they don't understand most of it, but they love it. And I think it's really funny that last night we kind of had our first ever like pizza movie night as a family, because they're just getting old enough to where it's like, oh, you understand the concept of like, let's have a pizza and watch a movie together. And also they don't have school because they're on winter break. So we're like, we gotta do something to entertain them. And I floated out. I was like, We can watch My Neighbor Totoro. We can watch Ponyo. We can watch Trolls. Like, we can watch all these movies. We're just unencumbered, both of them. We're just like, Barbie, we got to watch Barbie. I was like, okay, cool. That sounds great. So nice. I was able to rewatch Barbie and prep for this pod with them. And I think that does speak to the cultural power that, Barbie has. The intro to the movie, 2001 A Space Odyssey. We get the intro to Barbie Land. What I think is quite funny and great Lizzo song and like this kind of montage in the very beginning. Bobby, what do you think of kind of the introduction to Barbie as a whole?
I think the first 20 to 30 minutes of this movie are practically perfect. I love Barbie. Like, I consider myself like beyond the realm of the film. I just adore the doll. I love all of her lore. I love the ideology around it. On my podcast, I spent a whole month just talking and dissecting like Barbie as like this cultural phenomenon. I think she's incredibly fascinating. So the idea of bringing us into Barbie Land and how they chose to depict the Barbies and the Kens and how they interact with each other, and just like the set is just like so fun and bright and pink, and it's just like, it's so great. Like, I feel like I'm doing this with my hands because it's so tactile to look at. It reminds me of being like a little kid and playing with my Barbies. You know, I didn't have a luxurious Barbie penthouse or whatever, but you know, I had a modest Barbie condo and it was still very fun. But I think the first like little bit of the movie really does a great job of capturing the essence of Barbie. And then also I like that it kind of works its humor muscles like in the very beginning too. The idea of like, oh, like we solved feminism in Barbie Land, so obviously in the real world everything for women must be great. I think that's like some of the strongest parts of the movie are like in that like first like 20 to 30 minutes. Like, they're just so, the movie knows exactly what it is like automatically. It's really great.
Yeah, I love, I mean, some of my favorite stuff are just like the little quick one-offs, like, that's our president. And he's being like, I am, you're welcome. You know, it's just like, yeah. And then moving on, like, it's so funny. And even just stuff like opening the fridge to get the milk, and the actual fridge itself is like a sticker, you know, against the flat wall. It's like, that's cool how, like, if this doesn't get the production design, it's going to be insane. But I loved it. I thought it was great. I realized watching it this time. So we went to the Barbie beach party thing, like whatever they did for the preview. But we missed the very beginning of it because I foolishly thought we were going to have like 45 minutes of trailers, as you do, you know. It's like, oh, we can get some snacks, it's fine. So we came in while they were like in the middle of like introducing Barbie Land, and I didn't realize that we missed the whole Space Odyssey intro. So it was super fun to watch that. I was like, oh, cool. I knew they did the trailer, like I know we've seen it already, but it's cool they actually did the whole thing. And I thought it was just like, it was so well done. Those little girls just like smashing their other dolls and the whole context of like, yeah, up until there, the only way you could play with the dolls, you had to be the mom, you know, but now it's like we introduced something else. And I thought it was so smart. And then obviously just everything with Barbie Land is great. I don't know if we'll talk about him, so I'm just going to throw out, I love Alan. Like, every time I saw him on screen, it was just like so fun. Okay. I thought he was great. But yeah, the like you said, the first 20, 30 minutes of this is basically perfect.
Yeah, I totally agree. Can we break it down for a second? Because we kind of mentioned these one-off lines and quotes, and I think I think it really is pretty close to perfect the first 20 or 30 minutes, and we flex those humor muscles and things like that. This script, and I know we don't really know, I think right now it's slated to go into original screenplay, but Bobby, you mentioned it is like based on an IP, an existing IP, so we'll kind of see how that shakes. I'm really curious and what that might do for other nominees in those categories as well. But this is written by Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. I subconsciously spent most of the movie listening to dialogue and be like, oh, Noah wrote that. Oh, Greta wrote that one. Mm. Do you think it was an even mix, like combination in the first 20, 30 minutes? Do you think we're getting a lot of like Noah Baumbach really up until like kind of the dancing scene? Or I guess, Bobby, maybe how do you feel that shakes out? Is it noticeable to you when they might have like swapped off writing?
I thought it was pretty seamless up until maybe the third act is when I was like, I wonder who wrote this.
Put this one together.
Yeah, I was like, this feels a little botchy in the feminism department. Noah, was this your part? But the first half of the movie was like, I thought it was pretty seamless. Like, if you told me like, oh, this was written by one person, I would be like, yeah, I can get down with that. It's not until the middle to the end where I was like, okay, it does seem like it diverges into two different movies writing wise. But it's not anything too offensive, but it was something noticeable towards the end.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a great duo. I think what they put together was solid. So I'm not really sure if I was able to pick apart who wrote what, but I thought they did a great job.
Shout out Greta and Noah for like, congratulations on finally getting married. They just got married the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And reportedly, I know this will drop in a few weeks. So the other day, quote unquote, they probably got married a month ago by the time this pod comes out. They reportedly also went to a Billy Joel concert to celebrate, which is like, that's my speed, my guys. Yeah. Like, you did it. Congratulations. I think that's wonderful. I think I agree with you, Bobby. I think it feels very seamless up until about the final act, where it feels like we've really got to focus on like the plot drivers and the narrative kind of contrivances that are going to push us to the finish line of like what's happening with Barbie. And that feels a little bit more chopped up into like, maybe Greta had some input in this one or two sentences, and then Noah kind of rounded everything else out. I think it's interesting that they wrote a script together. I just think that's a really fascinating, like, kind of in the weeds, like, film thing to be like, oh my God, like, this is incredible that they, you know, each of them represent this, and then they got together and it's Barbie that they did. I think that's really pretty cool. Do you ever think about dying? The dance scene. I still think this is like Ken's shining moment, because if you don't take your eyes off of Ken the whole time, Ryan Gosling is on. He's at 110 the entire scene. Whether he's making facial expressions or he's like, maneuvering his body and his interactions with Simu Liu. I think this is a really, really funny scene that really seamlessly cooks in like the Noah Baumbach of like, you know, existentialism that we're gunning for, wrapped in this kind of feminist pink coating. And it works really well for me. I think it's a really great kind of pace that we set in the first 30 minutes of like, this is Barbie Land. Now you've established that. Let's move on to what's wrong. It works really good for me. Bobby, and anything on that scene?
The dance scene is probably one of my favorite scenes in film this year. I remember when it dropped either within the trailer or they like dropped it by itself. And I watched that thing on replay because it was so like how it was directed. I know Greta said that like all of the extras in Barbie Land are dancers, and you can tell, especially obviously this is a dance scene, but it just has that very like old Hollywood Singing in the Rain, like very like everyone's moving, but no one's like hitting each other. It's not clustered. Like it feels very choreographed and cool, and just like bright and dazzling. But I agree, Ryan Gosling's face when he's like doing the dance and everything, and like just doing it, but obviously he has something else on his mind of like trying to get close to Barbie and get away from Simu Liu's Ken. It's just so great. And I think those are the like best parts of his character. Like when Ken is not talking, he is still projecting his thoughts like via his like physicality. And Ryan Gosling also just being a dancer and performer, you can tell he was like, he had his Hugh Jackman moment when he was like, I get to sing and dance.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just really great. I thought it was just so funny. That's one of my favorite scenes for sure. Regardless of where everything else kind of ends up with it, I'm like, Ken in this moment, I love it. It's really great.
Tap into those Mickey Mouse Club days for sure. Get those moves back. I know you're right. You made a good point. Like even when he's not talking, he's still emoting. Like we still know what Ken is going through, which is like really great. His beef with Simu is kind of hilarious throughout the whole thing, you know, like just like the whole beat you off thing is like, it's hilarious. It's such a, it's great. The thing that I really enjoyed about this scene is that we got it in a trailer and you could easily watch it 100 times, but it still hit in the movie. I think sometimes we see things in a trailer and then it comes to the movie and kind of falls flat. We're like, oh, I've already seen this, you know? but this still worked for me in the movie. I'm like, oh shit, like everything comes to a halt. It's like, I mean, I'm dying to keep this party going or whatever, you know, like it still worked really well. So yeah, I thought this was awesome.
I know he skipped over it, but kind of right before this scene is where Ken goes to kiss Barbie. And I rewatching it, I was just like, I can't imagine how awkward slash like how many takes they must have had to do for this, because like Ryan Gosling leaning in to like, you have two gorgeous people that are like leaning in to kiss. And then, you know, Margot is just like, see you later. It's girls' night. And Ken is just like, every night, like we're doing this every yeah. night. And his, you know, I think like the thing that makes Ryan Gosling funny, especially in a setting like The Nice Guys or Barbie, is his small, almost unnoticeable quips or mumblings or things that he does that are not really spotlighty. And he does a lot of those things in this movie. And I think that like kind of keeps his Kenergy flowing. Barbie and Ken go, or I mentioned meeting with the Weird Barbie. I think Weird Barbie works. And I think it is very plain and simple of like, kind of spoon feeding us of like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to the real world and we're going to try and solve these problems. So it has that aspect to it. And I think you guys mentioned like the rewatchability of the trailer and this each scene. Unfortunately for me, like the Birkenstock joke just doesn't get any funnier. Like I think it's just downgrades every time. It started out really funny and then I saw it four times and then I was like, okay, I got it. That's okay. It's a Matrix reference. But yeah, I think that whole scene works, and I actually love the practicality and the nature of it, that like we keep going and we get a little bit of background on Weird Barbie, which I thought was pretty cool. Ends up being a pretty important role to later on in the film. A great little segue.
Yeah. One of my favorite gags, I think, with Weird Barbie is how everyone is just like, hey, sorry we call you that behind your back and to your face. Like, yeah. Throughout the whole movie, and at the end, she's like, no, it's fine. I'm embracing it. It's totally fine. So, but yeah, Kate McKinnon was perfect for this role. I thought she like was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else could have played Weird Barbie in it, the character still be effective if it wasn't Kate McKinnon. Like, I think she has just natural comedic timing. Like, I think even with the Birkenstock scene, because I agree, it does depreciate in value, like, as you know, rewatch. But I think her idea of, like, holding it and be like, well, you have to choose. So, like, you can't get out of this. And then just, like, the little things that she says. I think she says, like, oh, I'd love to see something about his mound, talking about.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, yeah.
Talking about Ken, like, it's just, I wonder if it was something that was written for her, or if Greta just told Kate, like, hey, just riff, like, you just whatever feels right in this moment, just go for it. Either way, I would believe it, because I think it really works. But I know some people like didn't really like Weird Barbie. I don't know if they didn't like her name being Weird Barbie, or they thought that it was kind of like ham-fisted that she's supposed to be this Barbie that gets her like hair cut off and like has crayon all over her. But I do think that it helps to explain why she's like this, if all the other Barbies don't look like that, because not everyone had a weird Barbie that they like cut all the hair off of and like ripped the clothes and like, you know, broke an arm off of. Like, I think if I didn't have that experience when I was a kid playing with Barbies, I would be like, well, why is this Barbie like that? So I do think that there was a narrative purpose in explaining it. And then it was nice to have the experience collectively as an audience be like, oh yeah, like I had a weird Barbie. I don't know. I love Weird Barbie. I think she's great. I don't know if I would have done that to my Barbies per se, but I like that she was representation for those who did.
Sure. Yeah. I like that she kind of filled that bucket. And I do like that we come full circle on her, Ben. You mentioned like kind of at the end where, you know, they once again apologize of like, sorry, we keep calling this to your face. So I think Kate McKinnon was really good, and I do think her energy really fit with the movie. And Bobby, I was going to call out that scene as well, where whatever she mentions about Ken, like, it to me, it seems just like a Kate McKinnon riff where they were just like, just chop it up and we'll see what happens and see what we cut, what we keep. And it did work out pretty good. That leads us into Barbie and Ken going into the real world. The very funny construction scene of like, I don't have a vagina, he doesn't have a penis, which I think is really fun. I think is very funny on an adult level of like what the context of that is. My 3-year-old then turned to me and said, that's funny, Ken doesn't have a penis. So I think like it works on several levels.
That's good.
Which is like, shout out Greta for just like doing that. Barbie goes to the high school, Ken kind of, you know, seeks the patriarchy and goes into the big Century City office building. The one thing I wanted to mention, I thought it was hilarious. The first president that we see is Bill Clinton, which I just think is a fucking elite call out in that context of that's who Ken is looking up to for the patriarchy. And I thought kind of splitting us into two journeys worked very well. One that's hyper specific to Ken and comedy, and the other that's to Barbie and like realizing the real world situation. Lots of really good dialogue in this scene too. I think the jokes were just kind of flying off the shelves, and I love the venture into the real world.
Yeah. The Miss Universe poster, like, oh, the Supreme Court, you know, like all that kind of stuff. I think my favorite line though out of this is when they're rollerblading and Ken's just like, I feel like everyone's watching me, but there's no underlying sense of violence. And she's like, there's a very large sense of underlying sense of violence for me. Like, yeah, it's like, it's just the simplest way to explain the different experiences they're having. But so many of those things are funny. Just like, no, you're not a doctor. It's like, but I'm a man, so I can do this. Right. Like there's just,
see, now that joke never is not funny to me. And it's in the trailer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Every time I watched that, I was just like, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, this whole sequence, I think, is like maybe some of the funniest like minute by minute jokes for sure.
Yeah, they pack it in. I think an underrated joke that I think did really well on Twitter more than maybe with like regular audiences is after Barbie meets, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her name, Ariana Greenblatt's character, mm-hmm. and they call her a fascist. And she's like,
so funny.
I don't have control of railroads or waterways. Like yeah. She goes for the very literal definition of fascist.
Yeah.
And it was great. I'm not sure how I feel about the Ken patriarchy arc. I think in this context, it was funny. I just don't know if I loved how it ended up. And I don't know. I just loved the moments when Ken and Barbie were kind of besties, like the moment with the Supreme Court joke where someone brought up a perfect matching for what I wanted it to be, which was like Kim Possible and Ron Stoppable type of thing, where like, Ken knows that he's second banana to Barbie, but he's completely content in that. Yeah. Like he does. Yeah. He's just like, I'm just happy to be tagging along. I kind of wish that they would have gone in that direction, but it's fine that they didn't. Like there has to be some external conflict and it makes sense for it to be Ken. But I don't know. I wish that they were like besties and that it did. There were points where it felt like Barbie was bothered by Ken's presence, like when she's at the bus stop and she's trying to think and he's like, go walk, and he's like, by myself.
Like
those are still funny, but I was like, I wish they would have gone a different route with that.
I could see that definitely being more beneficial. I think by the time we get to like the end of the movie, and I know Barbie and Ken kind of like have their coming together moment of like, hey, you're just Ken and I'm just Barbie, and obviously really boils down what we're doing with the film. It feels the Ken side of things does feel a little exhausted at that point in time. And it does feel like we're just like exacerbating the patriarchy joke, kind of over and over. Ariana Greenblatt as Sasha, really kind of ridiculous that she's in this movie. She's young Ahsoka in the Ahsoka series. She's young, Gamora in the MCU. She's kind of everywhere right now, which is really great. She is really, really funny in this movie. Mattel, I wanted to get your guys' take, because next in the movie, we go towards Will Ferrell and Mattel and the corporation and them venturing into Barbie land. I think for me, this is probably the storyline that works the least successfully. And really feels like it might have just like needed to be there as this like external driver of like, oh, hey, like, yeah, corporate overlords. That's pretty funny. And felt like they were really like kind of relying on that. Will Ferrell in that role is funny sometimes, but like we've seen him doing that for 25 years. And I just don't know if it fits the movie. And I don't know if that's a hot take or not. Like, I don't know how you guys feel about that storyline, but it's kind of the most tiresome to me.
Yeah, I think it's like the weakest storyline for me, maybe. But I have to admit, I do want some of those pink drumsticks. Like, yeah. I love that he holds drumsticks while he's having these corporate meetings. True. You know, like that does seem like a very like weird thing to do, but I dig it. So, yeah, but yeah, it's probably like the weakest storyline, but it does lead to some of the funny visuals of them like rollerblading together and that 12 person tandem bike, you know, things like that. Like, there's definitely some funny aspects of it, but I'm curious if there's a way to tell this story without that corporate storyline. I don't know if it works or not.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was the weakest of the movie story-wise for sure. I think it would have been a lot stronger if they just kept it to where Barbie goes to Mattel, she realizes she's in peril, they do the whole chase scene, because I thought the chase scene was pretty great, and then she gets away and that's the last that we see of the Mattel like execs and everything. I like Will Ferrell. I just like Will Ferrell. I think he's hilarious. Yeah. But I do agree. It's just very much like the I drive a Dodge Stratus character, as a Mattel exec. And luckily for me, I love that sketch. So like it never gets old, but it is. I'm like, I don't know if we needed this. And I think it only contributes to the 22 car pileup that is the third act of this movie when you have all of these plot lines converging and they have to figure out how to wrap it up, and you have just a bunch of Mattel execs who are just there in Barbie Land. Nothing changes. I don't think that they like allow her to become human. I don't think that they really have any autonomy in that scene. They're just there, and it was just, it was too much. Not, this is going to sound bad, too many men in Barbie Land. Beyond the Kens, it's like, okay, we've got Ken trying to introduce the patriarchy. You got these corporate overlords trying to like infiltrate Barbie Land. Like, what happened to my feminist utopia that was Barbie Land? Now it's just been in flux by like all of these guys. But I don't know. I don't think that they needed to be beyond the chase scene. Like, I think having it be like this little Looney Tunes-esque chase scene was more than enough. It was effective.
We've had a lot of great guests on here, but bringing up the Dodge Stratus dinner scene, I think you're my favorite guest we've ever had, because like I love that sketch so much, and whenever I reference it, like, people don't know what I'm talking about. Like, it's so good though. Like, I love that scene so much. Like, I do 50 push-ups. Yeah, that's I love it. Thank you. Sorry, I just I had to say that.
Can I ask you guys a question? Would you personally rock the Barbie's like Barbie exercise getup on the beach there, the neon highlighter?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Do I look like Ryan Gosling? Sure. Why not, man? Yeah. Let's do it. I'll bleach my hair again. It's been a while since I was in. Yeah,
dude,
let's do it.
We should do it. That live pod from the beach right there.
Is that what I get for losing the Oscar bet, to shave my head and bleach it? Is that the...
That it wasn't on my radar, but it is now. That's it right there. I'm going to have you reenact I'm Just Ken. That's going to be your punishment for losing
like
the Oscar bet.
Like
absolutely.
It's recorded.
I will.
So I can see it.
Yeah, exactly. Will do.
It's just I'm Just Ben, though. I want to make that clear.
Ooh,
wow.
And if you think I wasn't quoting that stuff around the house after we saw this, like telling my partner that I'm Ben F, you know, it's like, I think she got sick of it for sure.
That's really good. I like the Aaron Dinkins bit of the kind of CEO like boardroom. I thought those jokes were funny, even though they were like really unrelated to Barbie and like what was going on. Like Will Ferrell mishearing like Aaron Dinkinson or like whatever his name was, I thought was pretty funny. But much like you, Bobby, I was like, cool, we're good. Like that was the right amount. You just kind of lose some of that magic that happens in the first 20 minutes. By the time you get to the end of the movie, Barbie Land is very full of a lot of people and a lot of problems, and it's all converging like you mentioned, and so it does kind of lose some of that like sweetness. Next, Barbie Land does turn into Kendom, which I think is funny. I think, of course, like I'm gonna call out the Godfather scene, the Godfather
the Godfather,
the way the way that she comes in and is like, can you restart it and talk to me throughout the entire thing?
Yeah.
I just like, I've never felt more seen. So I feel like that was good. And that's like, that's that. And we've got like the Snyder cut joke and like really encapsulate like film bro happening. And I realize I'm being attacked, but like much like Ken, I'm just like, no hostility here. I'm good. Like, I feel like you get me. I like Kendom. I like kind of everything that comes with that. We really get an insight into the Kens. And I think it works overall. It does feel like a very clear departure from like the Barbie storyline that's happening, but it's fun. It's something different. And, you know, we get to hang out with Ryan Gosling for 20 minutes, which is pretty cool.
We get a horse Mount Rushmore, so that's cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, where are you guys at on horses? Are we pro horses on the pod? I've never
what does he call
wonder.
Them? He's like, they're extensions of men or
they're
something.
They're
men
extenders.
Men extenders. Yeah. Like I love that line. That was so good.
I don't even think I clocked that he said that. Oh my gosh. I just know he was like, I was only in patriarchy for the horses. Yeah. Oh, just such a funny thing for Ken to say. But I, contrary to everything that I've said before at this point, I did think the like whole Mojo Dojo Casa House thing was pretty funny.
Yes.
It's pretty great, but the scene where he screams Sublime behind the wall.
Incredible.
So good. So
peak
funny.
Ryan Gosling, honestly.
Very, that was the most like nice guys coded part of this movie. It was very much so like Holland March. I was like, there he is. There he is.
There he is.
There's my guy.
There's my guy. Because I was like hoping and praying. I was like, if this movie is going to work, Ryan Gosling has to play basically his role in The Nice Guys, but as Ken. And for the most part, he did that. But that was the moment I was like, yep, that's The Nice Guys. There he is. There's my boy.
Ben, where are you at on The Nice Guys? Because you're anti-Russell Crowe. I've never asked you this.
It's one of the few Russell Crowes I'm okay with. And
we did
I think
it.
A large part of that is due to Gosling. So I'm pro God. Nice Guys too. For sure.
Woo, close it. Call. Kendom scene, good for you?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I liked his salon with the extra O, so it could be the saloon, you know, on the Kendom doors. But yeah, all that stuff, like explaining the Godfather, like, oh, I'm just so bad with Photoshop, you know, it's like, oh, well, you can't select anything until you have a layer selected. Like just all that kind of stuff is super funny. And then really just like the amount of horses and horse stuff that we saw, because it's such a quick gag when he's at the library. He just grabs a horse book and you don't really think anything of it. Like, okay, whatever. And then we get there and just like the Mount Rushmore really just kind of took me out. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like he went all in on these horses. Like I was super into it. So I liked it.
Yeah. I really love it. There's a lot of good moments in this kind of like Kendom montage. This is where we really get the interaction of Sasha and Gloria. So the mom and the daughter kind of coming into like Barbie's problems and worlds and figuring out like we're all connected a little bit. And then we get this amazing America Ferrera monologue is kind of what we end up working towards right before the Barbies take back Barbie land. I mean, if there were ever like an Oscars clip for someone that like, probably could or should be nominated for an Oscars, like this is it. Really great monologue, great scene, really encapsulating of the movie. And I feel like that might really be the peak, like the highest energy we get from the movie. And it's hard to get back to that point afterwards. I think we come close at a couple of moments, but shout out America for a really great monologue that like, I'm not even a woman and I'm just like, fuck yeah, that's like, go for it. That's fantastic. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, it was, not to brag, I was at the premiere of Barbie, and after that scene happened, it was like the whole theater just erupted in applause.
Yes.
Cause I think again, to me, it may be a scene that could depreciate in value just because, you know, as a woman in society, sometimes it's not always that cut and dry. But when you first watch it, you can't help but feel like, yeah, like that's it. And I know a lot of people were like, oh, you know, it's so like baseline. It's so like surface level. It doesn't even begin to unwrap. And I think like Barbie is a film that was watched by the masses. And I know that there are some people who, you know, like moms, like aunts, grandmas, sisters, like who watched that scene. Anyone who has had the experience of being a woman who watched that scene, who may not be so deep into theory and, you know, mm-hmm. even like film theory and everything like that, were able to look at that scene and be like, thank you for saying what I've been feeling. And ultimately, I think that's what matters. Like, that's what has to be effective. This Barbie was never going to be deep in feminist theory. I don't think it was ever going to tackle those things. And I don't think that it wanted to, honestly. But that scene, for what it was, like call it fan service or whatever, but it was emotionally impactful because the crux of what Gloria is saying is really true, where there's this kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't. So just fucking do it type of thing mm-hmm. that you have to have. And I do appreciate the scene for what it is. You know, like if I watch it now, I may roll my eyes a little bit, yeah. but I still am like, it's still effective and it deserves its spot. And I agree. I think that's the fever pitch of the movie. And it never quite maintains that thrush, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say anything better than Bobby just said. So, like,
no, yes, like, come back.
No, I mean, everything she said was totally right. Like, watching this scene, if anything, it just took me back to experiencing it in the theater. It was like, oh man, this was such a powerful moment. Like, I feel like my audience kind of did the same, where everyone was like clapping afterwards because it is such a home run of a scene. It's the Mark Ruffalo spotlight scene. It's like, cool, here we go. Here's the fucking speech. Let's do it. You know what I mean?
They
like,
knew.
This is it.
They knew the whole time and they let it happen.
But it's powerful and it works. And like you said, it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't. And the way they're able to explain it, you know, it's just like, it's just done so well. So I'm contributing nothing to this part of the conversation, but I just love this scene.
I mean, look, two white guys that run a podcast about A24 trying to talk about the Barbie monologue, like this is where we landed. And
you guys are the target market. What do you mean?
Us, that's us.
We did it.
Here we are.
Yeah. I did forget to mention during the Kendom, I think one of the funniest ongoing gags is the Brewski beer me. Just every time I'm just like, that's great. That's really funny. Like, I might not outwardly laugh, but every time Emma Mackey is just like, I'll brewski beer you, I'm just like, that's really funny that they just like kept with it. They say it like 15,000 times. Okay, next we get Barbie's taking back Barbie Land. Really great montage. Alan trying to jump a fence, just can't figure it out for the life of him, which is just absolutely hysterical to me. I love, like, you know, that's the monologue is like the what pushes things forward to make people snap out of it. And then I'm just Ken. The number they do on the beach, and they realize they were supposed to vote. And that's, you know, if that's not prevalent to like guys and their voting habits, or I guess, you know, that's just is what it is. So I feel like that scene is really good. And, you know, for me, it's very reminiscent of Grease, and I love Grease. Ben, I know you're not on the same Grease level as me. That's I'll give you a pass. True. Grease has a scene in this movie. Let's just say that we see the movie, which is pretty cool. I like all those things. I think it's really a quick pace that we take from this moment on to like get to the finish line, and it feels very fast. But you know, I mean, that's a huge musical number that, again, like I think it's a really strong shot at best original song.
Yeah, I'd be curious to kind of see.
Disagree, Bobby disagrees.
it's tough because I think I'm Just Ken is the flashier like mm-hmm. musical moment in the film, but the What Was I Made For scene packs so much of an emotional punch that it when I watched it, and with the montage of the clips of the crews, like, you know, sisters and moms and aunts and everything, like I was like, this is what it means to be a woman. But I'm Just Ken is, I agree.
That was really good on the spot, by the way. That was like, that was sublime what that was.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I practiced. But I'm Just Ken is, I love Grease. Like, I rewatch it at least one time a year. It's great. So for that, I appreciate I'm Just Ken, because it does, like, it is very much so Grease Lightning. So I can't ever be too mad at it. But I don't know. I think What Was I Made For is a little bit stronger to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's definitely the stronger song, but I do like that I'm Just Ken. I see a lot of the dream sequence of Singing in the Rain in it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just because that's what I choose to see instead of Grease, but I see a lot of that in there for sure. But it's a great scene. And again, I love that when we go to the Supreme Court, Alan's there in his pink jumpsuit, just like happy that everything's going back to normal. So yeah, this whole sequence is really good.
Worth a call out too, based on like how we all feel about like the Mattel CEO storyline. Like, they're just showing up at the beach, and in this scene, just really kind of out of place, where it's just like, oh, we didn't really need them there. I don't know if they add a whole lot to this story.
The only thing I think they add in Mattel land is when they're asking at the end, like, well, what's their story? And she's like, oh, well, Barbie's in love with Ken. And it's like, no, that's not, like, she's not in love with Ken. Like, I like that they're able to address that. Like, everything doesn't have to end with like the romance of like, okay, she is in love with him, everything's fine. Like, I really enjoy that they took the time to point that out. It's like, no, she's not in love with him. Like, they don't have to be together. Like, they can be individuals. So maybe there's a way that we could have done that without them in Barbie mm-hmm. land, but that was the only real positive I found of them being there.
I think one of the funnier moments for me kind of in that scene, now that we're kind of like in the very end, right? We get this Ruth and Barbie moment. We kind of mentioned that song. And we get, you know, the iconic final line and kind of like the back to normalness that we get. Will Ferrell like coming out of the little house and being spooked by Midge and being like, oh, I thought we discontinued her. That's funny, like in the context of the movie. B, I think it's hilarious that Emerald Fennell plays that role, and it's the year of Saltburn, and like
Midge, yeah,
there's a lot going on there, which I think is really funny and panned out to work pretty well. So there are moments. And you know, then we work our way to the end, and we get maybe one of the most iconic final lines of a movie ever. Like, I'm here to see my gynecologist. Like, I think that's really funny. I think it really works for the movie. And it's the ultimate. It is like the ultimate encapsulation of Barbie, of like what we just spent an hour and 50 minutes doing. And to arrive at this point. So I think it finishes strong. But I think there's a lot that the Barbie Ruth moment, especially the line of like, mothers stand still so we can see how far our daughters go. I'm not a mother. I'm just a girl dad. But like, even me, I'm just like, fuck me up real cool. Yeah. Like, that's great. I appreciate that. That'll like never devalue for me. That is really impactful and momentous for the film. And I think the fact that I was able to achieve that by the end of that, we get to the movie, is important, and it is worth mentioning. So yeah, I think Barbie overall pretty great.
Awesome. Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies of the year for sure. And I think for all that it does that I don't love, it does so much more that I do like absolutely obsess over consistently. Like, I think it's one of those movies that reminds me about the magic of movie making, because it's so practical in a lot of ways, and the humor is so strong, and the characters are like, everyone's committing to the bit of being a Barbie or a Ken. Like, no one is phoning it in. Like, no one is like, oh, I'm a Ken, but I'm more than that. Like, Ryan Gosling is like balls to the wall committed to becoming a Ken.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably regretting it a little bit now, because everyone is quoting I'm Kenuff with him, I'm sure, every time he walks out of his house. But the movie is just, it's just so great. And it was really, I think, a good marker of where like the cinema was for like this year. Like, just really, really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was so good. I mean, this was fantastic. I don't know if we're doing our individual true cinemas, but we haven't talked about it yet. My favorite one line throughout this whole movie is when Barbie comes back to Kendom, and he tells her they're going to do the vote. And I think it's when he says they're going to do the vote in 48 hours. And she's like, you can't do that. And he says, literally and figuratively, watch me. Like, for some reason, that was like the funniest line throughout the entire movie to me. And like, I cracked up again, like just watching it. I was like, oh my God, like that line delivery is just so good. Yeah. Like, literally and figuratively, watch me. So, I don't know. I love that.
I mean, true cinema for me is when he yells Sublime. Like, I know that people have been throwing that around, and like, I have a Sublime Barbie sticker like on my laptop. Like, I like it that much. I think, Bobby, you mentioned like that is the most like, I feel like Ryan Gosling that we get kind of in the movie. And it's really just another great case study for, like, let's make The Nice Guys 2, or just, like, put him in a comedy movie, please. Because we need this. And yes. The fact that he feels like he needs to go around the corner to, like, to hide his physical manifestation of that word is super funny to me. The last thing that I want to call out is, like, I think I wanted more Harry Neff in this movie. I love Harry Neff. I think she's great. I think she is a wonderful actor. She's great in the Idol, and she gets totally stiffed on her storyline in the Idol. And I would have loved to see more of them in the movie, more of her in the movie. And so, like, I think if we're ever going to get spinoffs, if we're ever going to get anything out of Barbie, let's just get some Harry Neff in there. Bobby, do you have a true cinema moment? One moment that is your absolute favorite of the film?
Oh my gosh. I feel like I have so many, but I will say, I think Alan saying, like, Alans exist in the real world. NSYNC, they're all Alans. That got me in a way that I was not expecting, because all of the members of NSYNC are so Alan coded. And it's the most, like, comes out of nowhere line that means nothing to anyone except me. Like, just great. So good. Line.
Super funny.
Like, yeah, even him, you know? it's like so good.
We didn't mention Helen Mirren at all being the narrator, which I think is great. I obviously, her most iconic moment is, like, when Barbie's having a breakdown and is like, you know,
I'm so ugly.
Note to the director, like, Margot Robbie's literally the worst choice he could have had for this. Hilarious stuff. Love Barbie. Think it's great. Let's quickly tackle the best actress race and what that might shape up to be. Since this episode is being recorded and happening before we have the nominations list, it's going to look a little bit different now and for the next few weeks until we get an official nominations list. But here's what we're going to do. Predicted nominees, according to Variety, right now, December 21st, 2023. That's when we are recording this episode. They've got Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, at number one. Emma Stone for Poor Things. Carey Mulligan for Maestro. Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. And Greta Lee for Past Lives are the five. They have Margot Robbie on the sixth spot right now. Bobby, do you agree with Margot Robbie on the sixth spot? Who do you think is going to win Best Actress at the 2024 Academy Awards?
Now I feel on the spot. Like, because if I'm on Twitter, I was like, I knew it was her the whole time. Someone can run this clip back of me being wrong.
Oh, it's getting clipped. You bet. This is going down in the archives.
No.
I told you, I'll just AI over whatever you say. I'll just make it so you were right all along.
Yeah, let me just, like, put my hand over my mouth and no one can read my lips. Lily Gladstone, number one, feels, like, solid. Like, I think she's very, like, spot on. Literally everyone else, I'm kind of like, yeah, I mean, other than maybe Emma Stone, because I think she's an Academy darling. She's already won it before. Sure. Poor Things is getting a lot of really great praise, especially for her performance, so it makes sense. Margot being on the bubble, I think she's almost kind of interchangeable with Greta Lee in a weird way. Like, I think you could put Margot at five and it wouldn't make sense. You could put Greta at five and it wouldn't make sense. The one person who's missing from this, who I would love to see, is Fantasia for The Color Purple. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I already know that she's going to make me cry. And I think that she's already played the character on Broadway. And I think what she brings to the character and just the movie in general, it's just it's a feast for the ears and for the eyes. So I would love to see her kind of in contention as well. But those are kind of my favorites. Everyone else, there's always going to be a couple that I'm like, I'm sure you did great.
Sure,
sure, I'm not gonna fight you on it, but we gotta have five, so someone's gotta fill in slots two and three, I guess. But everyone else, I'm like, sure. I think Carey Mulligan. I think for everything that Maestro is trying to be, her not getting nominated will be a true shock. So I think that she's in. I know some people have been saying Annette Bening for Naiad.
Oh yeah.
I cannot speak to whether that's right or wrong. I have not seen it.
Yeah.
But I feel like there are a lot of names that are floating, but Lily is a lock for me. I know this is not the Killers of the Flower Moon episode. We're talking about Barbie, but I think Lily is the one that makes the most sense. And honestly, I think she might have the best shot at winning.
She's winning a lot of Critics' Choice Awards right now. I think like unspeakable amount. As is Divine Joy Randolph. You know, speaking of people that might be locks to win or be nominated. Ben, Best Actress race. Margot's on the bubble. You agree? Who you got to win?
I think Bubble's good. I think Lily feels like a lock. It seems like Emma is probably doing more in Poor Things. You know, like minute per minute. Like yeah. I feel like she's carrying a lot of that. But Lily's performance in Killers was wonderful. I'm just hopeful to see Greta Lee there because Past Lives was my favorite movie of the year. So just like personally, I just want to see her get some recognition for that. But Margot on the bubble makes sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think I personally, like if we're going to see Greta Lee be best actress, like can we just get John Magaro up there for best supporting actor? I think, or TNU, like I think those would be really wonderful nominations to go with kind of the Past Lives, maybe resurgence question mark that we're seeing or like push that we're seeing from A24.
Sad boy, John Magaro.
That's our sad
Rise
boy.
Up.
We did
him.
It.
We love him.
We did it. I have been saying Lily Gladstone, I think is going to be the winner. I think it just feels unanimous. I know we're a ways out, but it feels like that. Emma Stone will be nominated. I think the really interesting part to me of like, especially of this variety list is Carey Mulligan and Maestro. I haven't seen it yet. It's only been on Netflix for like a day. And the discourse has changed from like, oh, Bradley Cooper's back. Like we made a great movie that's really good and like really exciting to watch to like, uh-oh, this movie is kind of shambles and like maybe it's not as good as everybody thought. At least that's like what I'm seeing on my timeline and my letterbox. So I'm curious if that like really deflates and Bradley Cooper's thirsty for that Oscar. He's thirsty for the nom. I don't know how that'll pan out and play and how that will kind of ripple out to maybe affect Carey Mulligan's chances in this category. And I also wouldn't count out Natalie Portman for May, December.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say that.
Yeah, I think if you're going to talk Dark Horse, I think that has to be the number one Dark Horse for me. The May, December discourse has gotten very loud, especially when it comes to Charles Melton in Best Supporting. And I could see that spilling over into this and being like the movie that nobody initially thought was going to. And then it ends up kind of popping up in a lot more places. Margot at 6 on the bubble. Yeah, I agree. I think it feels right. I think it is one of the more interesting races and categories that we're going to be able to follow and track and see what happens. Best Picture power rankings. Bobby, do you have anything? I know we talked about Barbie being kind of 4, 5, 6-ish territory. Do you have like a 1, 2, and a 3 that you want to see happen?
Ooh, like me personally, I want to see happen, or like what's the best case scenario?
I'll give you either or, whatever you want to follow with your heart.
Okay, I'm going to follow my heart. I'm going to kind of blend my what is feasible, but also what's my favorite. I'm going to say May, December is getting into Best Picture. I would like to see it get into Best Picture. In my serious answer, is one of my favorite films from this year. And I think I agree. Mm-hmm. I think the discourse has kind of pushed it forward in a way that maybe Netflix wasn't anticipating, because I think that they were like, oh, we've got a Bradley Cooper directed, written, acted in movie, but then we've also got this really great character study that is filled to the brim with really great performances and a script that if it doesn't get original screenplay, you will never hear the end of it for me. You will simply never hear the end of it. That movie it's gotta leave with something.
Yeah.
I will engrave the Oscar with my canines if I have to, but Best Picture, I think May, December, of course, Oppenheimer. And honestly, weirdly enough, I think the thing that's the best FYC for Oppenheimer is the fact that it's sold out everywhere, mm-hmm. like physical media wise. Like I think that is the most effective thing for it right now. And then I'm evenly split between either The Boy and the Heron or Spider-Verse. working its way. Okay. I think it was a dynamite year for animation all around. There's no way Turtles gets in beyond anything like in best animated feature, but I mean, we got a Miyazaki and we got a Spider-Verse movie in the same year. So I think one of those works its way into best picture, or maybe both. There's 10 spots. So
yeah, that's true.
It could be both. I don't think the Academy would nominate two animated films. They would literally combust, but it'll be one of those two for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I respect that. I'm working on our collab power rankings here on the notes. Ben, do you want to kind of round out some ideas and then maybe I'll lock it in for us?
I want Past Lives to show up there. Okay. And you know what
else
you
want Past Lives or do you think Past Lives is going to be on there?
Yes. and I want, but I don't know if it will be there, the Iron Claw. I would love to see that show up on there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So let's see here what we're maybe working with. I'm going to try and finish this out. So here's what I've got for our power rankings as of now. No nominations list, kind of going off of our gut. What we like, what we would like to see, what we think will happen. I think I don't know if you guys disagree. Oppenheimer seems like the best picture winner for now. So I think we'll go Oppenheimer number one. Poor Things, number two. Barbie, number three. May December, number four. The Boy and the Heron / Across the Spider-Verse, one animated feature kind of making it in there. Killers of the Flower Moon, of course. I've got the Zone of Interest on here, kind of being the big foreign powerhouse that's going to come out in the late release schedule. Past Lives from A24 as well. I think we're seeing kind of that big push. Anatomy of a Fall, I think, is another big foreign push. I think the discourse is very strong around this. Every few days, I'm seeing another clip going around Twitter of like, hey, best picture, hey, best actress, hey, you know, best screenplay, like these types of things. And then we'll round it out with the Iron Claw. So the way we're looking now is very A24 tilted with three A24 films, which,
yeah,
I mean, fuck yeah, I respect. We run an A24 pod. Why wouldn't we?
Defending champs right now, right?
You know, so yeah. That's true. That's
they
true.
Are, yeah.
I think so. We leave off Maestro. Very interesting Netflix conversation. Of course, they can never quite find their way to the finish line, no matter what they think they have, even when it comes down to Roma, which should have won. No holdovers. That seems to be a big omission for us. It's kind of in flux. The energy around that is kind of in flux. And then I think the other big one would be The Color Purple. I think that could see a Best Picture nomination. But I feel good with this 10. Like, if this was our 10, I would be like, fuck yeah, we're back. Like, the Academy did it right and chose some really good movies. I think that would be really fun. And it would allow for some really interesting conversation. Cool. We've got our 10. Barbie's included in the list, obviously. Bobby, thanks for coming on the show. This has been wonderful. Do you have any closing thoughts that you want to end with? Anything you didn't get to push out on the pod?
No, I think I thought I was going to have something really profound to say. But
I was waiting. I was
successful
ready.
Pod. Yeah.
Yeah. Weird. But no, I think I feel like we had a really great conversation about Barbie, because I haven't been able to literally have my thoughts in long form about Barbie anywhere because of the strike. So this was my first time kind of getting to throw up all my thoughts. So I think I said everything. This was really, really great.
Cool. I'm glad. Any closing thoughts, Ben?
No, just I'm Ben Uff. That's it. That's all. It's gonna be my theme.
You need to we need to change our theme song, and you need to record it. And then for the 10 weeks right now, that's our theme going into the pod.
Let's make it happen.
Get hit with that copyright strike real fast.
Get WB just pull it down real quick.
Real quick, Bobby. If people want to find more of you, if they want your movie thoughts or pop culture thoughts or otherwise, where can people find you at?
Yeah, they can find me at The Afternoon Special on TikTok or Instagram, or over on Twitter at Hi, I'm Bobby, HIIMBOBBI. And I also have a podcast, The Afternoon Special Podcast. We just ended, we wrapped for our like mid-season finale this week. And I just talked about the 2000 How the Grinch Stole Christmas movie for 35 minutes.
Yes.
So if that sounds up your alley, that's what I do on the internet. That's my digital footprint.
Look, Oscar nominated How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I mean, come on, that's full circle.
Technically Oscar winning, because it got best hairstyling and makeup.
Oh, nice.
That's true. Yeah. Shout out Jim Carrey, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Shout out something of that movie. That's good stuff. Really exciting. Okay, so week number one is done. We have 9 weeks to go, 9 Best Picture nominees to go. Next week, we're taking another stab at the guessing game with the second best lock that we can think of. Probably realistically the first best lock, but we wanted to start with Barbie.
Yeah.
We're going Oppenheimer. We're doing the Barbenheimer phenomenon. We'll be kind of breaking down the dyad of Barbie and Oppenheimer, if you will. Sophie Holsinger back on the pod to rep for the Oppie heads. Ben, how excited are you
to watch this for the second time?
The Oppie heads rise.
3 more hours. All right, let's do this.
You're braver than me.
I cannot wait, unfortunately.
Don't sound so excited. God.
Just so excited. I can't wait. What do we decide between me and Sophie? We've seen it 13 times because you guys have seen it 6.
Yeah, between me and Sophie and you, 13 times. So you gotta pump up those numbers, Ben. Those are rookie numbers.
Rookie numbers are fine over here for sure.
I will say very quickly, by the time this comes out, we'll be about a week and a half away from our new pod, the Movie Draft Podcast. Oh, yeah. Sophie is our third co-host in that show. We're going to kick it off with a 2023 movie draft, Oppenheimer being one of those movies that's eligible to draft. It's going to be very fun. First episode will be on January 16th. So go seek us out. Go follow us. We have a trailer up there. Kind of bitching, honestly, if you ask me, but we're excited.
Bobby, you should come on. We'll do Will Ferrell movies. I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, my God.
Will Ferrell stuff.
Or like just drafting SNL sketches.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Kidding.
Gotta go
Don't
deep.
Threaten me with a good time, Bobby. All right. What awards do you guys think Barbie's going to pick up at the Academy Awards this year? And is it going to win Best Picture? Let us know. We are on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. You can also watch us on YouTube, see all of our beautiful faces. I'm headed there right now to watch the Dodge Stratus sketch for I don't know how many times. But go check it out. I'm Ben Lawhorn.
I'm Ethan Simi. This was sublime. I had to try my best. I gave it a shot. I was hoping
you were going to like duck out of frame or something. Just like go hide and then say
sublime.
Sublime.